Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
So, welcome along. We are talking to Jim Telfer and Andy Nicol on the show this evening. Ireland headed for Fortress Murrayfield at the weekend. Also, Trevor Ringland joins us to talk about his rugby life north and south of the border. On the football show, Kenny Cunningham is going to feature heavily. No escaping. And Phil McNulty as well, football show on the way after nine. Phil McNulty, BBC's chief football writer on Contrasting Fortunes on Merseyside. Hello, Kenny.
Evening, Joe.
How are you?
Yeah, all good. All good.
Been a while.
Has been, isn't it? Yeah. The hibernation period over the Christmas and New Year. So.
Do you actually hibernate?
To the extent where I just kind of maybe cocoon myself off from the rest of the world, probably.
With a few good books.
Probably a few
couple,
books, yeah. A
couple of box sets.
No. Box sets, no. Not for a long time now.
Not even an old Netflix
anything.
Binge.
No. It's a long time since the days of 24, those days we just get home from training under the duvet.
Oh.
And 2 days later, your day off the following day. God.
The good old days.
Oh, yeah. Mad stuff, like just.
So is that what you do back in the day? Training might finish midday, 1 o'clock, wander home, nothing to do.
No, I did. I mentioned 24 because then when that came out, that was the first initial hit. Do you remember those box sets? That was the one that really like blew everybody away. So I vaguely remember getting into that first season, second series coming out, getting my hands on it. We used to trade them. A few of the lads used to get them obviously before me. I wouldn't know where to get my hands on them. So
2001, it was released.
Is that what it was?
So you probably got hold of it a few years after, two, 3 years
well,
after.
Yeah, it would have been, because it would have been at Wimbledon at the time. So, yeah, a couple of years after that, yeah, I would have discovered or stumbled upon it. Anyway, one of the lads would have rented it out and given it to me. So I do remember getting home from training on a Tuesday, nobody in the house. And just thinking, I've got to get this on. Just heading upstairs into the, pulling the curtains. It's like 2:30 in the afternoon. This was a Tuesday afternoon. And then vaguely remember then it was like 4 in the morning. I think it was Thursday before training. It was like 5:30 in the morning.
That's not good for you.
No, not good at all. So I remember arriving into training about 8:30, 9 o'clock, thinking, that can't happen again. I can't.
Damn you, Jack Bauer.
I've got to try and discipline myself here.
It's hard. We've all said one more.
Oh,
I shouldn't.
My God.
But I'm already pressing play.
It's unbelievable. That was my first experience of something like that. That kind of. Just literally couldn't leave it. Yeah,
Pringles.
Absolutely. Caught me by surprise.
Was 24 good? I watched a few of them. I didn't think much of it now.
No, first one or two.
Wasn't for me, Clive.
Really?
Yeah.
Bit formulaic, Kenny, I would have thought, no?
But obviously, you're talking down to me there, Joe, are you?
I watched a bit of the first series and just left it. No, didn't do much for me.
No?
No.
I was all over that.
Blew your mind. Fair enough. It's very popular.
Small
I'm sure.
mind.
I'm sure it's good.
Band of Brothers?
Yeah.
It strikes me you would have been mad into Band of Brothers.
Band of Brothers, yeah. I keep bouncing them off me. I've forgotten them all.
We couldn't keep that box.
Did you watch Breaking Bad?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hard to keep them going, though, isn't it? I mean.
Did you watch The Crown?
No, that's a tipping point now. Now, back in the books now. It's been some years since I got into the box sets.
Because the last time you were over, you just ordered a book on either World War I or World War II, hadn't you?
I read that. Yeah, The Devil in the Drum. Yeah, that was good. That was about two Cork lads served in the British Army in World War I.
Right.
Yeah, that was a good read. Yeah, enjoy.
And what are you reading at the moment?
I've just put one down. Dark Rose Lane. I mean, did I mention to you earlier? Was it you I was talking to? No?
I haven't really talked to you.
No, it was Adrian.
Oh, it was Adrian, was it? Yeah, he asked. Yeah, I just put that one down. That was... Yeah, really interesting. Written by kind of British war correspondent. What's his name? Is it Michael Nicholson?
What's the name of the book? I'll check it.
Dark Rose Lane. Set in the famine in Ireland. It's a book, it's fiction, but touches upon factually based, like touches upon the Young Irelanders movement and obviously the years 45 to 48 predominantly, like, but and intertwines the story in. There is a fictional story, but In terms of the landscape, it's pretty much as it was. Like, it's quite harrowing, I've got to be honest with you.
Dark Rosaline is a story of love, murder and betrayal, of a failed rebellion and a national scandal.
Yeah.
Get Pat to do that in his book club. You could go on Pat's book club. You'd be ideal for Pat's book club.
I was listening to Dion Fanning talking to Tommy Tiernan. and he's got a new podcast out now, well worth a listen. And Tiernan was making the point, and I think Blind Boy from Rubber Bandits making the same point, that we haven't really as a country fully dealt with the famine, you know? Sort of, it's so horrific, maybe we haven't fully excavated everything that happened. Like, you think, my granddad's granddad was, you know, in the famine.
Yeah.
It's just so recent. It's far more recent than actually we really ever engaged
with. It's pretty much
with.
As recent as, say, Black America has to deal with slavery.
Mm.
And we don't, it's just, that's the thing that happened years and years and years and years, yeah. years ago.
Lots of food left the country at the time, you know, they're like...
Yeah, plenty of people profited from it, you're right.
But
a lot of politics at play as well, but...
But it's rarely kind of talked about in popular culture. Black 47, the movie, did very well, actually. I still haven't seen it, but that was one of the few times you kind of see it popping up and just generally referenced or talked about, you know. So, Dark Rosaline. Love, Death and Politics in the Time of Great Famine and Hardship in Ireland. This is a novel based on the true story of the Great Famine in Ireland of the 1840s. Historically accurate. It's a story of murder, betrayal, a failed rebellion, and the love of a national scandal.
Just read that bit.
Yeah, because kind of the Young Irelanders kind of grew out of this kind of the physical force element of, I mean, the IRB came soon after that, didn't they? And on it went from there, obviously, like, you know what I mean? Then there was kind of, I'm thinking 1860s, 70s after that, Michael Davitt, I remember coming on the scene there in terms of...
See, that to me feels very recent, 60s, 1860s, 70s.
Yeah.
1880s, obviously, 1890s. That feels very recent. So it's just...
Yeah, and then you're right into it. It is.
Half a generation back, really.
Did you ever formally study history? Or would you be interested in doing it in any way, shape, or form?
It does interest me, to be honest with you. Yeah, maybe looking back, in all honesty, you look back at the years and you think, oh, could have really, if I really pushed myself, I could have had enough hours to maybe jump on a couple of different other things outside of the football, maybe.
Like a part-time degree, maybe, or something?
Yeah, maybe, but Irish history would have been one, maybe now, like with a little bit of clarity looking back, because it would have had to really interest me. From a practical point of view, I think maybe skills, some skills, just practical skills around the house. Now, I'm useless, really, like, so I think to myself, I'm a bit lazy there, really, could have easily got on a plastering car, so on a practical level, like, yeah. You know, but in terms of something you could really kind of delve into, really, would really kind of fire you up a bit, yeah, maybe, something in terms of Irish history.
So would you think about going back as a mature student down the line?
I don't think so, no. Too late now. I'm happy enough just...
You're not too late.
...pooting along in the... Nah, it's not too late, but realistically it's not going to happen. I'm happy enough now just pooting along, picking up a few books here and there, and that's probably enough, but... Yeah, but no, it's... Books are amazing, really, actually, yeah. Like I said, the last few months I've stumbled upon them again, but...
And you'd stop reading, had you?
Yeah, I had no conscious decision, just one of those things. Had read a lot, then didn't. Then just kind of stumbled back into it, but... Yeah, it's a bit like you're talking about the box sets. Once you get it, but you can't get enough of them, like, you know. So it's literally been a case of putting one down.
One book begets another.
Pick another one up.
Good. Well, you've spent your hibernation well, and you're welcome back. That's what we're saying. So, did you watch the rugby at the weekend?
Oh, I did. I watched it in London, in the house. I was looking forward to this, and I really was. I can't remember a game I was so confident in it. In an Ireland team, forget about the sport, an actual Ireland team, so confident, such a big game as well. A little bit of nerves there, you're always a little bit playing it down, oh, what ifs, but I mean, we've been playing so well at such a high level for such a long period of time. Just, I knew England would be strong, it'd be a close enough game, but just getting used to Ireland just when it matters, just, you know what I mean?
Delivering,
you know,
just
the right play.
Just delivering to the favourites tag.
Yeah, but I wouldn't talk down the performance from the Ireland team. I thought actually Joe Smith surprised me. I thought he was a little bit scathing. Like, I heard his comments straight after, just kind of in terms of to the extent that they kind of beat us up. I thought, oof, bloody, I'm not sure about that, like, but it did feel as if from early on in the game they had... Wasn't just like in terms of their physicality, just in terms of they looked as if they had clear pictures and a game plan, pretty much like ourselves, like almost in terms of the game plan was set, everybody understood it, knew how to implement it, and they were so disciplined. That's what struck me for the whole game. They've given away penalties. I've watched them play last year in the halftime, a little bit all over the place, and they've lost their mojo, but they've been giving away penalties in discipline, the whole shebang, where again, Stuss, it was...
Generally very good, yeah.
Yeah, really impressive.
No, they were. It was interesting, I don't know if you saw the comments. They were certainly over in the papers here yesterday. Schmidt was saying that he had an uneasy feeling about the group's mentality before the game. Didn't get the vibrancy, was the word he used, and the energy off them as a group that he had seen before the New Zealand game in November and before other big games. He was a bit worried with the atmosphere pre-game. Was very interesting. So we're going to Murrayfield on Saturday. Exciting times. And we're going to check in.
That's not an easy game, is it?
No, far from it. We're going to check in with Jim Telfer and Andy Nicol around 7:30, get their thoughts on how Scottish rugby is doing. Jim Telfer, Kenny, did you ever watch the Living with Lions documentary back in the day? Is a documentary about the Lions team that went to South Africa in 97. Did you ever see that?
I've seen a couple of them. Maybe not that one, as early as that.
Okay, stick in your headphones here.
Oh, lovely.
This is one of the famous clips. Jim Telfer, who played with Scotland in the 60s, if I'm not mistaken, I think, 64 to 70, I read earlier on today, and obviously was their Grand Slam winning coach, and then coached the Lions in 83. And Andy Nicol are going to join us. But Jim Telfer was part of the Lions setup in 97. Here he is, Kenny. Here's the scene. There's a young Lawrence Dallaglio, a young Martin Johnson, a young Keith Wood, and they're all sitting around. And they're about to play the Springboks at the weekend. And Jim Telfer's giving them a little talking to about the fact that the Springboks don't respect them.
They don't rate us. They don't respect us. They don't respect you. They don't rate you. The only way to be rated is to stick one on them. To get it right up in their faces and turn them back, knock them back, outdo what they can do. Out-jump them, out-strum them, out-ruck them, out-drive them, out-tackle them. Remember the pledges you made. Remember how you depend on each other. They are better than you've played against so far. So it's an awesome task you have. It'll only be done, as I say, if everybody commits themselves now.
And it generally goes on like that for about another 20 minutes.
While that rousing speech is being made, who's playing pool in the background? Because it's the sound of somebody knocking in balls and Oasis playing in the background. And somebody wasn't taking it entirely seriously.
Wonderwall was the anthem of that team.
That was, some might say, that's gone on in the background there.
Yeah, so Oasis were the big kind of band at the time, obviously. So Jim Telfer's going to join us, still going strong. He's going to be on later on with Andy Nicol to talk all things Scottish rugby, Kenny. See what he makes of the game. Recently binge-watched 24 in the space of a month. It was heavy going, but I couldn't stop. My girlfriend reckons I love Jack Bauer more than her now. Love the show, Paul from Donegal. There you go. Designated Survivor was his latest effort. Kiefer Sutherland. Did you see that on Netflix?
No.
Paper thin.
Wouldn't go near. Been on a musical tour as well.
Wouldn't worry about it, Kenny. Has he?
Yeah, I think he's due to play here. I think he's due to play the Academy. I don't know if that's happened yet or is.
Oh, Bandler. He's always been involved in a band, isn't he? Like, he's loved his music. Always.
Yeah. Right, let's get moving then. So that is the show. We'll have a busy football show. There's lots of football for us to talk to you about. You haven't been in a couple of weeks, so that's all on the way. Richie, you're starting with more bad news from the Ireland squad.
Yeah, another day. More bad news on the injury front for Ireland. Devon Toner and Gary Ringrose both ruled out of Saturday's Six Nations game with Scotland at Murrayfield. Toner aggravated an ankle injury in the second half of the 32-20 loss to England at the Aviva, while Ringrose is continuing to work through a hamstring issue. But despite a hip problem, Keith Earls is expected to be fit. Tyke Furlong says there's no room to dwell too deeply on that defeat to England.
Losing games is never nice, but it doesn't mean you throw it all away either and you start changing things massively. I think if we get back to, you know, the accuracy that that we can bring, you know, we're confident we can bring the performance as well. And, obviously, you have to take the learnings, but you don't carry, you know, the hurt with you into this weekend and maybe try to do something you wouldn't usually do or whatever, you know, just go back to what we do well.
Mauro Itoje?
Yeah, he's been ruled out of England's Six Nations games with both France and Wales. The Saracen lock suffered a knee ligament injury during Saturday's game at the Aviva. His club teammate Nick Iziwaki has replaced him in Eddie Jones' 35-man squad for Sunday's game against France at Twickenham. Forwards coach Steve Borthwick says Itoje's loss will be most keenly felt in the lineout.
Yeah, well, he's a great jumper and a caller. But as I say, we've got some great players there. You know, and I look at George Cruz, Joe Launchbury, Corny Laws, and we've called Nick Ezekwe into the squad. So we've got some fantastic players competing for places there.
One other England line as well. Saracens announcing this evening that Wasps international back Elliot Daly will be joining them in a 3-year deal this summer, Joe.
Jurgen Klopp then?
C- could well be in bother. He's been asked by the FA to provide his written observations after his post-match interview that came after Liverpool's 1-1 draw at West Ham. Klopp was critical of the official's performance at the London Stadium. An obvious offside in the build-up to Sadio Mane's opening goal last night was missed by assistant referee Simon Beck. And here were Klopp's comments.
Scored a goal, which I heard after the game, that was offside, but explains a little bit the second half, because I think the ref knew at halftime. I knew it only after the game that it was offside. And he knew it for sure in halftime, and then you saw there was a lot of strange situations, not decisive, just rhythm breakers. They obviously that didn't help us, and so the second half was so many situations, at least 50-50, 60-40, whatever, and free kick for the other team in a counter-press situation, and Nabi wins the ball back. That's not a foul. So, but I go down, and when as a human being, if I would know that I made a big mistake in the first half, well, I don't want to make, open the gap a bit more as a human being. So your refs are obviously human beings, and so I understand that. In the game, I didn't understand it because I had no clue that our goal was offside.
We'll come back to that game later on the football show. Did you watch it, Kenny? Yeah,
I did. Yeah.
Liverpool not good.
No, it wasn't a good performance. First performance from Liverpool this year. I know it's a slow start to the season, but first performance that worried me a little bit. Watching them last night. Yeah, I'm not quite buying into the. I'm missing a few players through injury, because the most worrying aspect of performance for me was the performances of the front three in unison.
Firmino had an appalling game last night.
I couldn't believe it was the same player, Firmino. I couldn't believe what I was saying. Just couldn't touch, couldn't complete a pass. And he's the one generally that links things up for Liverpool, that up the pitch, dropping off, popping the ball 1-2 touch, playing balls in for
Salah
people.
For as well.
Yeah, the whole front three, even Mane, even before he got the first goal, all over the place. I mean, Salah, a couple of nice touches on the periphery of the game, but... yeah, there was a lot in that performance last night. Just if I was Liverpool supporter, I'd have been a little bit worried.
Okay, we'll come back to that. Maybe some good news for them, Rich.
Yeah, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain has been named in Liverpool squad for the Champions League knockout phase. The midfielder hasn't played since sustaining multiple ligament damage in the first leg of their Champions League semi-final with Roma back in April. It had originally been expected that Oxlade-Chamberlain would miss almost all of this season, but Jurgen Klopp recently revealed a return to training later this month, perhaps earlier next, could well be on the cards. Liverpool faced Bayern Munich at Anfield for the first leg of their last 16 tie on February 19th, with the second leg at the Allianz Arena on March the 13th. Clubs are allowed to register 25 players in their Champions League squads, as well as 8 locally trained players. Republic of Ireland underage internationals Caoimhín Kelleher and Conor Masterson are both among those 8 for Liverpool.
Meanwhile, those of us wishing to head to Gibraltar... not easy.
Yeah, it seems several thousands into 900 won't go. The Gibraltar FA say tickets for next month's Euro 2020 qualifier with the Republic of Ireland have now sold out. 900 tickets for the 2,300 capacity Victoria Stadium have been allocated to Irish travelling fans. Online sales were blocked by the Gibraltar FA to prevent Ireland from taking up more than their 40% allocation.
Would you have preferred playing in front of 30, 40,000 or 2 or 3,000? Or did it make no difference to you whatsoever?
Not much of a difference. The conditions of the pitch, is this an all-weather pitch? My memory served me right when Wales went over there. Well, I remember a couple of years ago and played Gibraltar. It was an all-weather surface. So wondering if it's the same one. That for me was the bigger factor. But crowd-wise, no.
I always think Premier League teams must find it a bit strange to go from their usual 30, 40, 50,000 plus to 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 and an FA Cup tie.
I don't know what you mean, yeah, but it's pretty weak. It's pretty weak if you're using it as an excuse. Our concentration levels where we couldn't get our head around the fact it was only 1,000 or 2,000 people there. So that doesn't really stand up for me. It's no excuse.
It's as plastic can be.
It is the same one,
yeah,
is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be the only small little bit of concern. I'm sure the lads will get over there generally, 2 days before. They'll have a couple of sessions on it or whatever, like, but even something small like that, it does. You've got to factor it in. I mean, there's the classic, I mean, back in the day, of course, QPR, I don't know if you remember, Joe, Luton Town, those artificial pitches first came in, and you went and played there. I mean, you didn't get a chance to train there from the away team. You generally arrived just an hour and a half before the game, league fixtures. And it took you...
they were dreadful things.
Yeah, but it took you what? I mean, the ball coming at you quickly, just arriving a split second earlier, just in terms of the weight of the pass. It did take a while.
Sure. I know the...
just to get yourself up to speed. No, this is a different type of service, and obviously it hasn't improved, but the principle's still the same. Like,
sure. I know the 4G pitches are still aren't great for the joints, but I mean those QPR pitches back in the day, they look like concrete.
They were killers. They look like somebody had laid a Sabutio mat over a car park.
It was like a car park with Sabutio mat.
Well, I played with a couple of lads who played at QPR. And that was the first one.
Hang on, we lost your mic. You're back. Go on.
The QPR Loftus Road. That was literally cement. That was concrete. And one of their players came to Millwall after that. I played with him for a couple of years. Ian Dawes, and he said he spoke to a couple of the old QPR players after that post-retirement, and it was generally agreed that playing on that surface for a number of years, not just Saturday to Saturday, during the course of the week as well, would have trained quite a lot on it to get that kind of edge that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Tends to that zips to their pass and like opposition teams wouldn't have been used to. But he said it undoubtedly took a couple of years off their careers, their joints, ankles and knee joints, hips. Like hip transplants, nobody got away without a hip transplant within 10 years of finishing playing. It was that they were that brutal,
Would you have trained in AstroTurf in training?
I'd train in concrete at a home farm in my hall from about 13 to 17 every Wednesday night.
Well, you
under the floodlights, the old basketball area in the corner, literally concrete.
As a pro, would you have trained in AstroTurf, or was it always grass as a pro?
No, it would have been always grass. Yeah, that would have been the preference, unless there was any reason to. I mean, generally the pitches were quite, we had a little foot at Millwall under Mick, we had a little area. It was like Field of Dreams, Kevin Costner, in a little small corner of the training ground. You couldn't go touch it during the week, and the grounds would be out there manicured and talking to it like his little baby, you know what I mean? Reading bedtime stories, everything all during the week. And Friday afternoon, after we'd done a warm up, a little bit of a shape, boom, boom, set pieces, Mick be like, right, 5-0. And everybody just go whoosh.
5-0.
Like chariots of fire across the training ground over to this little 5-0 for the 20-minute game. But the surface was absolutely peachy. Yeah. Peachy.
Is that what the pros called it? A 5-0?
5-0. 5-0. Whoosh. Last one.
Come on, Kenny. You'll love the crown. British royalty, intrigue, romance, scandal. It's right up Kenny Street.
Now, British royalty, back on his British history, doesn't interest me at all. It's like that new film out there, Mary Queen of Scots, Saoirse Ronan, who I love. She's absolutely brilliant, but I can't bring myself. No interest whatsoever in that.
Find British history interesting?
No, I don't actually, to be honest with you. In terms of the monarchy, London succession, all that. No, it really doesn't do for me at all. No.
There are some intriguing historical moments in it. So it's charting, obviously, Elizabeth II's reign. So her as a 19-20-year-old meeting Winston Churchill for the first time. You know, she's working her way through all the various prime ministers, you know.
Right, gotcha.
So there are moments like that are interesting to think, God, wow, I'd love to know what went on in that room. Churchill, you know, and this 21-year-old, I think she was at the time. I'm sure he wouldn't have thought much of her and would have thought he could boss her around, but by all accounts, he didn't.
Yeah. English interests me a little bit when it overlaps with her own. So you talk about Churchill there. So when you talk about the time of the kind of treaty debates around that kind of time, when they're kind of intertwined a little bit, obviously that's when I'd obviously pay a little bit more attention. But English history per se, no.
Not for you.
No.
There was a documentary on last night that apparently was very good in RTE about the Irish Revolution. I didn't see it, I just saw people saying good things.
This is the Killian Murphy narrated one, was it?
Yeah. You might check that out if you're home for a few days. You get it on the player.
Oh, sweating already.
We'll show you how. We'll write down instructions for you. Last story or two, Rich?
Newport County hoping to reach the fifth round of the FA Cup for just the second time in their history tonight. The League Two side play host to Middlesbrough, with the winners sealing a home tie with Manchester City. Padraig Amond starts up front for Newport tonight. Non-League Barnet are hopeful to reach the 5 for the very first time. They're away to Brentford in their fourth round replay. Wolves have a potential banana skin with Shrewsbury Town of League One visiting Molineux. Matt Doherty starting for Wolves tonight, while QPR welcome Portsmouth to the recently grassed 20-odd years ago.
It's never been a potential banana skin, is it? Shrewsbury going to Wolves.
They pulled them to a replay, Kenneth.
No chance.
Yeah, no chance. What are you doing?
No chance.
Come on, next story. That's rubbish.
You're literally the worst person. Derry City have had a busy day today. They've signed former Real Madrid and Liverpool midfielder Gerardo Bruna, who's most recently been with USL side Ottawa Fury. Former Bohemian striker Owen Stokes has also joined ahead of the 2019 season, with Darren Cole re-signing for the Brandywell club. And Derry have also signed, agreed even, a pre-contract agreement with Institute's in-form striker Michael McCrudden. And a pair of spoken word events with Tyson Fury have been cancelled here in Ireland due to safety concerns. The former heavyweight champion was due to appear at Cork Opera House next Tuesday and the Helix in Dublin next Wednesday. It's been reported that the Helix box office received threats by someone claiming the event would turn into, quote, a repeat of the Regency. The journal say that the Gardaí are aware of the incidents of threatening behaviour. Today marks the third anniversary of the Regency Hotel shooting that claimed the life of David Byrne. Fury represented by MTK Global, who have found it difficult, next to impossible even, to have their fighters box within the Republic of Ireland since that Regency attack.
And then Jose Mourinho, finally.
He has accepted a one-year prison sentence for tax fraud in Spain, but he won't serve jail time. The 56-year-old former Manchester United manager must pay €2.2 million of a fine, but his custodial sanction has been suspended. It's part of a deal with Spanish tax authorities, who accused Mourinho of failing to declare image rights revenue while at Real Madrid in 2011 and 2012.
The number of these players being done for this at Madrid and Barcelona, have you heard in the grapevine, were they getting bad advice or was it willful, or do we know?
I don't know too much. I think they are quite complex. I'd be absolutely amazed if any. If there's too many players, they get themselves too heavily involved.
Yeah.
In terms of how exactly their money is.
Bad moves being dished out there.
But see, players at that level, kind of. Ronaldo was the same, wasn't he? Suspended sentence. Like
Xabi Alonso was up before him.
Yeah.
Plays him as well.
Yeah, exactly. Like yes. I mean, absolute minefield.
I should remind you, by the way, tune in tomorrow, OTBM, as usual. They've got some very exciting rugby news on the show tomorrow. And then just to keep the announcements coming, tune in tomorrow from 7. We've got some big GAA news. That's all I can say, Kenny. No, don't.
Big A news.
It's all I can say. Big announcement. That's all I can say.
Any more? Anything?
Nothing.
You've got to give me a bit more than that.
That's all I'm giving you. I'm under strict orders.
Like, how big are we talking here, Joe?
Very? Give me a metric.
You're talking about
words.
Oh, right. I see where you're going with this. I probably shouldn't.
Do you see where I'm going with this?
Well, I'm guessing you're going to is it an announcement?
It's an announcement.
Right.
Let's leave it at that, though.
Right. Fair enough. Are you telling me to leave it?
I am telling you. Right. We're leaving it. Leaving it. You'll find out tomorrow. You'll be in tomorrow.
I did promise Tom I might pop my head in, but I'll be honest with you, I could be struggling.
Well, you're in here tomorrow night anyway.
All right.
Okay.
I promise Tommy you'll be in the morning as well.
Yeah.
You're a sick man, Kenny.
Yeah, I got my days.
I got my
days mixed up. Yeah. Don't want to let him down, though.
Don't worry about Tommy.
I know. Right. Tommy's sound. Mucking him around, yeah.
We've got to move on. So, we're going to talk to Jim Telfer and Andy Nicol next. Scottish rugby on the up at club level, certainly. And Murrayfield didn't go so well the last time Ireland pitched up there late, as it turned out. So, we'll talk to the two lads next.
Do you feel moderately happy?
No, I feel like I've been kissing my sister, I suppose.
In the pocket for his drop goal attempt. Here he goes, O'Gara. He's done it. That surely is the grand slam.
We target players all the time. That's part of rugby, isn't it? Let me know.
Sexton, wonderful pass and Stockdale finishes.
There'll be more than grenades. There'll be full tanks and full shells landing on the Aviva.
Grand slam winners on St. Patrick's Day. At Twickenham.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.